restaurant.
There was a suggestion that before any type of moed, we should speak a little bit about the moed, and Tisha B'Av is a moed. It's definitely called a moed, so it's the last side over here. And in our Dvarim sheet, we have an addendum, quote unquote, B'mikra, on Tisha B'Av. Just because one of Rishonim has a piece on it, I felt we would go through the piece a bit and understand a little bit about it, think about it, because it does give us some very important points about Tisha B'Av and so on. The piece is a Torah Mincha, who is the Talmud of the Rashba. We have some other pieces from him. He's somebody who kind of straddles Kabbalah and Pshat and so on. So Yesh Lishol, he puts out a question. What are all those things we do for Tisha B'Av? Mayin Iser Chitzos Sichinos Hasandel for Chuma Bais. And why is it Ovel Chayv? In other words, what's the theme of it? Lamashal, and in Kippur, we do these things to be contrite. In other words, the Inui Shebo, the deprivation and the sense of not having, makes a person more humble, contrite, and easy to do tshuva. Tisha B'Av has an element of tainus to it, that's true, but also the Avelus, how do these things symbolize Avelus? And this goes very much to the heart of understanding our hashkafa on Avelus and so on. V'yeshlomi says, V'pnei sha'misa hi pirut chibur ha'nefesh min ha'guf. In other words, there's a tremendous difference between our view of death and the world's view of death. The world views death as destruction, as oblivion, as non-existence, and so on, which is, I guess, similar in a sense to the way the Rambam describes charis, non-existence. The we understand death as separation. In other words, a person is a guf and a neshama, and you've separated the two parts. And therefore, all of the inyanim that we deal with over here are things that an obvious chayiv in it are things that deal with the chibur of the two. Now let's take an example. He says, "Rechitza sicha, unoisin idem b'tainich v'asaguf." It's something very interesting. When you eat something good, it tastes good. The body is nena from it, and even if we wouldn't have a nefesh or neshama, the body would still enjoy it. So animals enjoy eating, and there's a hunger drive, and there's a pleasure. You know, the animal chooses foods. Those are purely physical nyanim. But on the other hand, thinking, etc., activities that are just basically purely ruchnistik nyanim. When a person washes himself clean and so on, when a person goes to a spa, when a person has those types of hanoah, it's not a physical hanoah. I'm not aware of animals that enjoy taking a shower, and many coarse and primitive people don't at all enjoy that type of thing. But there's a certain sense of pleasure that one is clean, it smells well, etc. Those are sort of pleasures that are bred by the kesh of the nefesh and guf. I look good, I feel good, I am clean. That those are reflections of the nefesh of the nefesh when it comes into kesh in a kesh with the guf. So tashas hamita, it's not the pleasure of tashas hamita itself is physical, but the inyan of it is lahafos or lachaba o nefesh gufacha. It is something which is it creates more of those entities. We believe, because again, if you think about it, we believe that there is a that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a collection of the neshamas. The Gemara calls nefesh beguf, and there's a place, let's say, or whatever, however you'll describe it, where neshamas are. They exist whether they have a body or not. Bodies are made of chaymer, which there's plenty of chaymer around, you just have to shape into a body and so on, that's not something which is significant. But what creating another human being means bringing another nefesh into the guf. V'chein, ne'ilas ha-sandal mayra l'chibur. Of all the elements in wearing, shoes have in themselves a very deep inyan. It says siluka mayra l'pirud v'chalitza tochiach. The clothing are on top of a body. You don't put the person into his clothing. The clothing dresses a person and so on. Shoes, you sort of put the person into a shoe. And that's why the whole Indian of chalitza revolves around taking off a shoe, because it says it's a remez of neshamis in the guf, and they are caught in the guf, and they don't, you know, and they don't. The brother has neshamas that had to come to this world. He wasn't able to do. You're doing it for him. Chalitza undoes that. When you go to Makom Kaddish, we say Shal Nalechem Al Raglecha. Shoes have in themselves, and in Yanim of Pnim, shoes represent the shoe to the body represents the neshama in the guf. Because in a certain sense, you can shake the entire person is in a shoe. If you think about it, the clothing around the person, you can remove the clothing without affecting the person. The shoes, you must take the person out of the shoes, or like if you take the shoes off of the person out, but he is inside it. What's inside the shoe is his lowest part, and what sticks out of the shoe is everything else, which is a very strong muscle for the neshama and the guf. We have a piece of neshama in us that we're aware of, and that's sort of the part that physically is bound with us. The rest of it is affected by what we do and affects us, but it's not directly in us. The same way, if you move the shoes, the entire person will go along with it because he's in it, but he's not really in it. He's in it, but he's not in it. That's the muscle of a person to a neshama to a guf, like a person to a shoe. Oh, yes.
The shoe there is the guf, and the person is the
yes,
neshama.
Yes.
Maybe the lashon of na'al also has some.
Correct. And it's also interesting that the thing that the shoe is sort of skin. That's what it is. It's you're putting yourself into an animal skin. I mean, halachically, leather is the primary raw material for a shoe. Anything else doesn't really count as a shoe halachically. I mean, that's what we do Tisha B'Av. So it represents that, and therefore it's also the purut. V'chein ha'atifa, in the time of Chazal, atifa was one of the forms of avelus. You have it by a metzora in the pasuk. Atifa, it's hard to describe something we don't really have, was they would lower, just like if you have a talus over your head, they would lower it much further down. And the point to it was, it's sort of, when you wrap up your face in a shawl, it's hard to speak. It takes the koch hadiva out of the guf, which is the sign of shaminit. The oval does not speak. In other words, the koyach hadibur is the koyach of the neshama, and when you remove it, the person is no longer medaber. So he says, and really, when I dinner less of the recover call, an oval should not be talking at all. But since it's impossible, you must talk about different things. So b'meila, there's restrictions, but on certain things, l'moshal shela shalom, divrei Torah. But those things that he must have, like eating and drinking, those are things that we left there, so on and so forth. So he says like this, and let's sort of define his point. His point is that Mises is seen to us not as a void, but a separation of two elements that don't want to be separated, that should not be separated, that are half things. That's what it is. It's a separation between guf and nefesh, and that's where the tsar of the misa is, because just like Isha and Isha, just like a zivug of a Isha and Isha becomes one, and Chazal indicate that the loss of a spouse, Rachman Atzlan, is the hardest loss on a person. When a person, Rachman Atzlan, loses children, it's a tremendous tsar. But the sense of one's existence coming, sort of shrinking, is there. Ein Isha Meitzah L'Baila and Baal Meitzah L'Isha. Those are things that, because if something is totally void, then whatever's mourning it is a step removed. But if half of me is still alive and it's yearning for the other half, that's the most profound sense of loss we have. I'll give a muscle, a pretty terrible muscle. But I know somebody. Let's first give the hamisa. Let's say a person is a B student. Fine, he's a B student. He may be jealous and wish he was an A-plus student. And, that might exist. But it's jealousy, and he wishes he could. But it's not depressing. I know somebody, a young man, who was top. A-plus student, All-American, excellent in sports, best in his school, valedictorian, etc. He was in a car accident. For a long time was in a coma. Doctor didn't think he would live. He pulled out of it, regained all of his physical functions over time, and most of his mental functions, but he became the equivalent of a B-, a community college type guy. And he is an extraordinarily depressed person, because his real mitzvah is an A-plus, Ivy League student, and he's living with the awareness that he's missing. When somebody is jealous of somebody's brilliant, he doesn't feel he's missing it, he just wishes he had it. But when he knows that this is him, and it just locked up and gone, that's a terrible, terrible, terrible tzar. The guf and the nefesh, they both need each other, they're meant to be together, and the tzar of the prater is a real tzar, because each one is a full, it's a sensitive entity that can sense it and doesn't have it. So he says, since that's the way in which a person is misabel, that's the way we also need to be misabel as a nation on the Churban of Bayis, because the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Beis HaMikdash is the same as the relationship of the Neshama to the Guf. In other words, Klal Yisrael as a Klal is an entity that's meant to have something else in there. And therefore, when a person has in himself the knowledge that he's hollow, like that student we spoke about, who became like a C student, he knows the time. He knows that in his head there was once a brain that was an A plus, and he walks around with that sense of terrible loss, and he goes through the Torah's Mincha, a lot of similarities, just like the nefesh puts dibur into a person, the Shechina puts dibur in Beis HaMikdash, like just Vashem Yishalayim. Just like the nefesh, one of the things the nefesh does is it gives a sense of smell, because the Gemara says, you make a bracha on reach, even though reach is not a physical pleasure, there is no physical accruement for the guf through reach, but there's some sense of nachas ruach, sort of from reach. So the Beis HaMikdash was a place where of reach nechoyach Hashem. And then the flip side is, it says v'lo riach b'riach nichoy chachem. It says similarly sight. It says v'ya'ene v'li b'shom kol ha'yomim. It says v'atchol yiras ne'ashem l'kecho, iria, shmia, and other things as well. So l'maisa, the sense, the Beis HaMikdash, Shechina and Klal Yisrael, or Beis HaMikdash, is as Nesham is to the Guf. The churm of it is not the destruction of it, but the separation of the two, and that gives us its tzar. Yeah? Okay, now he says, what's the point of going to Yerushalayim when it's Charif? So he says like this. He says, V'shem Atome says, Kimish HaSalkayim, since all of it's gone, why are Tzadikim HaChassidim endangering themselves to go to Yerushalayim? But what is the Yerushalayim today? It's very similar to Kuzari that we've seen. V'Yishlomi says, you go there like a person who goes to the Beis HaKavaris to visit someone who's dead and to be mishtateach on his kever. And he says there's a nachas ruach both for the living person and for the dead person. That's what we do with Yerushalayim. So he poses the obvious question, what's a nachas ruach for the dead person when you come to the grave? If he's dead, he's dead. So he says, if they shall nefesh mitzuyah saviv likivro. So he says here a big yisod. It's actually sort of the tip of the iceberg, and let's talk a little bit about it. A chazal say the following, that when the nefesh, if the first 3 days the nefesh kind of is linked with the guf, it's just hovering around it, and so on. Then it goes up, back and forth, up and down, until through a long process of 30 days a year, it sort of removes itself completely. I guess if we need to get a picture of it, I don't know, the right way to picture these things is not physically, like the nefesh is kind of has wings and it's sort of flapping around it. Let's try to picture it a little more maturely and so on. A person, a young boy, goes off to yeshiva. Well, I have those at those college. The first days he misses home terribly. He's home, that's where he was, he went to school, but home is where he is. And the first few days, it's very, very difficult. And he's really, his mind and heart are at home, and he's just functioning in wherever it is. As time goes on, he more and more gets bonds with the new place, and begins to see his home as a place that was, and its memories, but that's it. A person gets married. So again, let's say he gets married at a relatively young age. So he's still attached to home, and there's Darken Yazov. And slowly, he begins to see himself as his home is his home, and his parents and that home was. But those are not easy emotional transitions. Those transitions, you know, it's a process where you have to see yourself as part of it. It's not, you know, the problem is we always look at these things very physical. It's going to Gan Eden is not like taking a train and you're going from Washington to New York, or you take a plane and you go to Switzerland and you're here and you're there and that's it. We're talking about a nefesh coming to perceive itself as a different entity. For 120 years, the person saw the guf and as his self. So the nefesh, it's a process where the nefesh needs to begin to forget that, to perceive itself as nefesh. And just like we, you know, we're all maminim. And somebody would ask us, I mean, is the guf any significant? No, the guf is just a kind of temporary vehicle, so on and so forth. So why do you put so much care and effort in grooming it? Why do you want to look so good? Why do you want to do this, that? The answer is because we do see it together. For us, the separation of nefesh and guf to us is unthinkable. We just kind of have a way of understanding it. When a person dies, the nefesh, it's a slow separation process. One. Two. The nefesh, what we call the nefesh and the neshama, consists of an innumerable layers of perception that range from the very, very physical to the almost divine. In other words, there's a self that is very, like a childish perception of things, where the world is very physical, very real, and things are abstract, that just simply just almost don't make sense, to a very, very refined us that sees the ruchnistic world almost as a mitzvah. It's a continuum. The Chazal gave us five madrigas, nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. The truth is, each one of these five madrigas has its own five madrigas, and it's ad infinitum. It's a continuum. So, just like the physical bones are in the kever, there's a physical part of the nefesh that stays with it. And then there's a higher part that's above it more and above it more and so on. We're not talking about space. We're talking about the concept. So when you go to a kaver, it says, and Rosh Hashanah speaks about it, there's still some sort of kedusha attached to bones. That's the inyan of the Hasidim and so on, why they go to Kvarim and Mispal there. Because it says, that's why Chevron was so dear and precious, because it contains Chelkas Mechokek. By God, it says that Chalkas Mechokek from Sofon Tomon, God was Zochet that Moshe Rabbeinu's cave there. So what's the schus? I mean, the answer is because there is some nekuda of Moshe that is, especially we'll see in a second, Tchias HaMeisim means it's not dead. It's dormant, but it's not dead. So there are things that have in themselves still some sort of ruach and so on and so forth. By the way, I guess we'll sort of explain Litvishev were very against it. The Goyen was very against Kontribus Aquarius. He said the Klippers are there and so on and so forth. What he means is, let's translate into our language. When a person goes and he goes to see a caver, if he senses the caver as being the thing, the body is the thing, that's Avodah Zarah. If he senses this as being the bottom end of a continuum of a nefesh and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's good. The danger is that worshipping the dead turns into Avodah Zarah, into worshipping the dead. And that's why, I mean, the Goyim uses his language, says the Klippas are there, but it means that. Yes?
Maybe this may be a difficult question, but is there, given this understanding, is there any significance for those who are not Zochi to have a kever?
It's a big, what do you mean?
There are many people who, they're entirely obliterated from existence.
It's a tsar. It's a tremendous tsar that, you know, it's a very big tsar, and that's why it's very easy to bring someone to Kev Yisrael. But there's no such thing as obliterating completely. It exists, we're just unaware. Mm-hmm. You know, in the ashes of, in Poland, somewhere under the ground, lies millions of neshamas, of gufas. Now, so he says that's a nachas ruach, or something there. V'ki v'cheni says ashchina b'mikdash, d'chsev chofef olav kol hayom. The same thing. In other words, a human being and neshama is parallel to Beis HaMikdash and shchina. Just like if the neshama sticks around on the guf to some degree, so to the shchina Beis HaMikdash. V'ayram razal, hine ze oimer achak kasleinu zu ashchina, shalei zoze mekoyis ma'arabi. So he says over here that we have something left over there. And I want to point out something. People think that Tchias HaMeisim is a Nechama. And we'll speak about it in a second. We'll speak about Tchias HaMeisim. I want to point out the other part. There's something in psychology very popular called closure. In other words, if someone has died, then your mind says it's over, it's gone, it's no longer part of your life, you must move on. And it's possible to move on because there isn't much holding you back. But, you know, you sort of wish you didn't have to move on, but you move on. Let's say somebody like Shalit, let's say somebody is captured. There's no closure because even though he's not here and it seems almost about to get to him, but it's still possible. The sense that something still exists and actually is meant to come back creates a hope, but it creates a tremendous tsar, like it says by Yaakov Avinu. It doesn't allow for closure or nichum because it's not gone. In other words, had we been chas v'shalom, had it been a matzah, we had been am Hashem, and then we're not anymore. So we would say, oh, terrible, we were once upon a time fortunate, we're not fortunate anymore with somebody else, and that's that. But it's not true. We still have the sensation, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there in a very, very dormant form. He's there as just a wisp of what was there. but it's still there, and therefore we live with the yearning. We can't give up, and we know that it is still us. It's still part of us, and therefore we miss it. So the pangs of yearning something which still has some metzius is deeper than if we would have pictured as being completely obliterated. That's what he says again. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to return the Shamas to the Guf and Chiyas HaMesim, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, like it says, Ani Omas Ve'echye, and says, Ki Esel Shamayim Yodi, V'amati Chaynech Lo'ilam. So, the Vayna Dechsiv, Hayichyu, Hayichayos, Avonim, Maremes HaOfer. Will they bring the stones to life from under the mounds of earth? So the world, in other words, when we talk about churban and misa, we're talking about pirut. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world where certain elements are supposed to merge together and become one, and that's its real metzius. So Klal Yisrael and Shechina, Adam and Neshama, Guf and Neshama. If those things are separated, it creates a Pchinas Misa. That's what we call death, the separation of the two things which had formed one element, and in other words, that one entity no longer exists. So just like a man and a woman together form a Mishpacha, and when they get divorced, the Mishpacha ceases to exist, despite the fact that the man and the woman still exist, and still possibly Mashiach Rishasai, the same thing is true by the same thing is true in other things. The Beis HaMikdash and Shechina and a Kufin and Nefesh. All the inyanim that we have with a mace is because we relate to that Nekuda. So inasmuch as there's Pchias HaMesim and things are going to come back, it's a Nechama, but it's also the cause of the tsar, because we can't let it forget. And that's what he says, Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaChayim. Eretz HaChayim, because the Shechina is there like a nefesh and a guf. And Shechina going away from Eretz Yisrael creates the same thing as a guf going away from Shama. And he says, just like a person is mishabel on his mace, because that's a karev, Klal Yisrael has a chiyuv to Mishab and Shlaim, because there it's graven. So I guess I want to use it to translate Avelos on Yerushalayim and the Churban on two inyanim that are relevant to us. It's, if we see it, as long as we don't see it, let's give a muscle, a very difficult muscle, but a muscle. Somebody who, God forbid, never saw a parent, a father, mother. They died before he was born, before he was born. It's not the same. So a child grows up, and the emotion that hits him is jealousy that other people have a father and a mother, and or a mother and he doesn't have. So there's a jealousy. And that's a difficult, and it's difficult. Greater is the tsar of a child who felt a father or mother in his life, was old enough that he had a father or mother that held him, played with him, laughed with him, and so on, and that was taken away. Because that was really part of his metzius. The other one never had that metzius, and therefore the tsar is kind of a different type of tsar. Understanding, in as much as we're Ruchnistic people, Shechina was part of our lives. A real sense of Ruchnius. I mean, we're dead. We don't have a terribly powerful sense of Ruchnius. And the little bit that we have is just a taste of what we had. So a person needs to visualize not how terrible was his sense of Charif, but that's really what I'm made to be, a Ruchnistic person. Every person down deep is frustrated that he's not inspired enough, not moved enough. In other words, the ruchnis that's missing in us, we feel because we should have. So we need to relate to it as that which is missing in us as Zuchtistic beings. We need to understand that there's always some remnant left over. Just like it says there's an etzim luz left over where Chias Vesa starts from, there's an akuda that starts from. And what we're hoping to get back is ourselves. We're missing so much. If we think about it, the Torah that we have, that we as Orthodox Jews practice today, is a reformed version. No Karbanis, no Tum V'Taira. For those of us in Chutzpah, it's Zeroyim, except for oranges from Eretz Yisrael, it's quite meaningless. No Sanhedrin. How many Mesechtes and Shas are still Nagia? How many Halachas Nagia? The vast majority are not. Because we just don't have it. In as much as we have a taste for Ruchnis, we need to see ourselves as being truncated beings. We don't have very much of Torah. Certainly not in its depth and its grandeur and so on and so forth. But if we were able to say, well, it's gone, it was, what a chaval, we lost it, and that's that, the right emotion would be come to grips with it and move on. But it's not like that. Imagine this fellow that I was telling you about that lost his abilities to, but the doctors told him, we still see that those brain cells exist, but we need to form the pathways to get to it, and we still haven't. That increases the pressures and tensions much more. Because they can't just say, okay, what was, forget about it, you're born anew, start life over. It's not true. You have it, and you're just missing a key to get to it. The sense of ruchnistic dwarfing that we have, we were so much bigger. I mean, if somebody comes to me, all the mitzvot of the Vilna Goyen. So I say, wow, so wonderful, so great. I wasn't meant to be the Vilna Goyen, and that's not me, and that's it. But if I was the Vilna Goyen, then it was me. In Klal Yisrael, we were three times a year, we'd come to Beis HaMikdash and have a sense of immediacy to Hashem that a Navi had. Yeruah calls the Churchot, it was called Re'iyah, it was like Chazon Yeshaya, and Yeruah calls Churchot Liras for Liros. We came, we saw, and were seen. I mean, three times a year, we had a sensation of imminence to Hashem that is Navi-like. That was me, and that was you, and that was everybody else. And it's still there, and it's waiting. It's not something. If we were to ask a frum person, what would you want for anything else? We would honestly answer that we have a sense of reality in the frumkeit that we do. We believe in the davening, the learning, and the mitzvahs, and it's all true and everything good. But it's so hard for us because we don't have any sense of it. And it was sort of like a blind person believing that he's painting a beautiful painting by following directions. I believe it, but I'm not getting satisfaction out of it. The avelos on the churban and the return of it is to give us back that dimension. It was us, it will be us, and in a sort of latent form, it still is here for us. And that it makes, on the one hand, the tsar much bigger because it's here, and we should by right have it, and we could have it, and we need it. It's something that is us, and we're missing it, we need it. And the other hand, it's the nechama, because it's there, and when the right circumstances come, when the right time comes, it'll be back once again, Alice. Okay.